Well, hello there. Ari Rosenbaum with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's episode, we're going to talk about the new e-disclosure rules for retirement plans. The Department of Labor just issued a few weeks back, and talk about some of my concerns about it and obviously my opinion about it. But of course, first things first, that 401k virtual conference for Friday, July 10th. Be there. Sign up. Find the links on LinkedIn, Twitter, sign up for the free webinar at Zoom. Now that people are going back to the office, we're going to cut back the number of hours of the event. We're just going to have a two-hour event on July the 10th. And between then and there, we'll be announcing some other events called that 401k Virtual Bunch, or that Virtual 401k Bunch, a small... You know, I wouldn't call it a webinar, but more of a Zoom meeting, and where I, you know, instead of a presentation, I talk to a professional in the retirement plan business, get their insight, and have a wide discussion. That's the plan. We'll have dates for that shortly and announce it. And of course, still, as I record this, we don't know if there's going to be a Major League Baseball season this year. Hard to believe players and the owners haven't gotten their act together. I wish I would have had this discussion back in April, but they're still hammering out something, you know, and then obviously depending on the states, I don't know whether there'll be crowds or not or whatnot. So when we're thinking about the 2020 events that were scheduled for Houston, St. Louis, and Minnesota, you know, I'm going to be frank and honest, it's likely they all have to be rescheduled for 2021. Which leaves, you know, I had some events planned in the fall, but I think the first event back, we're going to try for December in Las Vegas, December 4th, Friday, December 4th, Summerlin, Nevada, right outside Las Vegas at the Las Vegas ballpark. Details will be available soon on that event. I just think that it's unrealistic to, you know, try to schedule events for October and November, and you never know if there's going to be a second wave, and I just don't want to go through the whole trouble of, instead of having to reschedule three events, having to reschedule about five or six. So go to that 401ksite.com for obviously with more information on all the events. And of course, that brings us to this week's topic. Now, this week, everybody's talking about, you know, I've seen, you know, quite a few articles about Department of Labor giving its opinion that plan sponsors could find investment options that expose participants to private equity. You know, usually it's going to be in a mutual fund, some exposure. You know, I see a lot of people writing about it. I've written something about it, which will be published soon. And my two cents is that I don't really know that people were really clamoring for something like that. I know the two Groom Law Group clients were clamoring for it. But outside of that, I don't think that there's been, you know, a definite desire or need for private equity exposure in 401k plans. I've never really heard an advisor say that they were interested in private equity. You know what's missing in a 401k menu? Private equity. I've never heard an advisor say that. Doesn't mean that they don't feel that, but I've never heard it. And, you know, when they talk about, you know, investment options, you know, I hear a lot of advisors not crazy about target date funds, you know, push more for managed accounts, you know, so it's, I don't see how this private equity information letter, whatever it was some, you know, something that everybody's clamoring for. Just my two cents. But in terms of seismic shifts, what I don't feel that's been given enough concern and issue is the new e-disclosure rules, which will save the retirement plan industry hundreds of millions of dollars, and it will spare lots of trees. So let's talk about it. If you know my writings, I'm a big fan of business history, and I'm a big fan of technology. I'm still wowed by technology. I'm 48 years old, so that means I'm old enough to remember that we didn't own our own phone. We had a rotary phone that we had to rent from the phone company. They were all Princess phones, if I remember, or And it was just like one or two designs that you actually had to rent the phone from Ma Bell, which was just New York Telephone back in the day, which 9X, Verizon, whatever it is. But anyway, I'm fascinated by technology. I remember the first time I heard about a video recorder. My mother was saying that my aunt was going to record an episode of Evita, which was going to be on PBS, and I didn't understand the concept of VCR. I thought that she actually had to put a video camera and videotape the screen. I didn't know that there could be a machine that could hook to a TV, and that the TV signal would be recorded on a tape. I didn't understand that concept. When I heard the first fax machine, it wasn't even called a fax machine. The first time I ever heard of an idea of a fax machine is Google it, put it in your Google machine. FedEx had something called Zap Mail. What was Zap Mail? They had these huge fax machines at the FedEx office. So if you missed your document for, I guess if you're a lawyer and you forgot the contract that you wanted your client to sign and you flew from New York to Chicago, FedEx positively promised that they would have your fax document within 2 hours. I think if you Google it, FedEx lost a lot of money on Zap Mail. Why? Because everybody got a fax machine. It's really hard to lay out so much cost, and it's the same thing with video rental clubs who charge for membership. Pretty soon, everybody went to a free model for membership, and so you couldn't make money on memberships anymore. So it was really hard for FedEx to make money on Zap Mail, and they lost a ton of money. So technology always fascinates me. And I think with the Department of Labor finally going to e-disclosure notice, you can make a joke that they finally reached a 21st century. But of course, the joke is, I started in the business in 1998, and they were still doing most trades on a 401k plan through the telephone. I remember my first mutual fund that I bought, which was the Kaufmann Fund, which I think Federated bought it at one point. You could only buy shares directly through the mail or a wire, or I think eventually they developed a phone system. And that's the same thing with the 401k plans. It was done by paper, it was done by phone. The very first, I worked for a TPA, work well, in conjunction with TPA. When CBIZ Retirement Services Inc. came out with its first website, I want to say it was maybe 2000, 2001. It was called Smart Plan, and was the biggest piece of crap you've ever seen in terms of websites, because all it did was show you your account balance and by source. So when I first became eligible in my 401k plan with that law firm that was affiliated with them in 2000, still, allocations by paper election. And then eventually, technology changed, and finally, I was working with companies that had websites where you could invest in. So it's fascinating that we've been headed towards this paperless society, and the last 10, 15 years maybe, we've been going that route. I would say mostly in the last 5 to 10 years, where now we, get everything by PDF, email. It's obviously negatively impacting the postal service. It's certainly negatively impacting the paper industry, but it's good for the environment, C killing less trees and creating less waste, and that's a big to do. But the Department of Labor was very slow to the uptake, as I said. They did give some insight a few years ago that they allowed certain businesses where people were sitting by the computers for some type of e-disclosure, but that's dealing with clients that are TPAs and financial advisors. Invariably, the notice requirements have always been a big problem, and you always get a question with, "Ari, can I do this?" And it's just usually the answer is no, unless again you had a business and where everybody's sitting at a computer. It was impossible to meet that DOL safe harbor. So Thankfully, on May 27th, the Department of Labor finally published a final rule that allows retirement plan administrators to use an electronic method of delivery for required disclosures. This is great because it will allow, you know, obviously retirement plan providers sending a lot of paper. It will save millions and millions and millions of dollars, which hopefully would result in reduced fees to plan participants. And this is a great thing. But the problem is, as with anything, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, and with great rules comes unintended consequences. So we'll talk about that. But again, this is dealing with covered documents under ERISA. So the Safe Harbor Plan notice, except for these combo notices, which we'll talk about, that's an IRS notice. So this covers only Department of Labor notices. So that's important to realize. You know, obviously, you're dealing with a covered individual, which is any individual entitled to a covered document who provides an electronic address to receive a notice of internet availability or assigned an email address for employment-related purposes that includes the delivery of covered documents. What does that mean? It means that you have to get people's email addresses. It could be their home address. It could be their work email address. But you can't just create an email address for plan participants to just receive a notice. So it's got to be a work-related email or a home-related email, not an email address that you just set up so they could get notices and then you didn't tell them about it. Department of Labor is pretty swift. They know when people are trying to cut corners, and that's one way they'll try to cut a corner. Before a plan sponsor, the plan administrator can send out e-notice. You know, they have to send out an initial paper notice, which would tell them that the way they currently receive plan disclosure is going to change, and that the cover document will be issued electronically to an email address. The identification of the electronic address that will be used. Any instructions required to access the covered document, a warning that the covered document is not required to be available on the website for more than a year or until superseded, like an SPD is superseded when there's another restatement, a statement of the right of the participant to request a paper copy of the covered document for free, and an explanation of how to do so, and a statement of the right to opt out of electronic delivery. So, send out initial paper notice, and then it explains it. And then the problem is that the plan sponsor has to also put out a annual notice of internet availability for each cover document that uses this method. So you have to provide a notice to participants. If it's an email notice, we can talk about, you know, there has to be a statement that reads disclosure about your retirement plan. A statement that reads important issues about your retirement plan is now available. Any identification of the cover documents. Again, the web address where it's available, if it is. A brief description of the document. Statement of the right to obtain a paper copy. An explanation how to do so. And again, the right to opt out. You know, all notices are going to have to be in English. All notices in a language, and when I mean English, not, you know, you could put it in Spanish. I mean English in terms of not ERISA-ese, in a language that plan participants will understand. And with these email notices, the biggest caveat that I see is the bounce back. In order to fulfill the prongs of the safe harbor, if the plan sponsor, you know, they have to have a system in place to let them know when an email address bounces back or is invalid or whatever reason that the participant didn't receive it. Because under ERISA, you know, once they're alerted to an invalid address, the plan sponsor has to be prompt and take reasonable steps to cure the problem or treat the participant as having opted out of electronic delivery so that their paper disclosure is given to them. So, you know, when I send out my constant contact emails every week, a lot of times I just don't look at the bounce backs. And when you have send out 14,000 emails and 400 bounce back for some reason, that's a high number. Plan sponsors don't have the ability like I do and ignore it until it's, you know, quite humongous. As soon as they know that a plan participant's email address bounces back, they got to do something. Combined notices. The e-disclosure rules allow for it. It allows the plan sponsor to issue a single notice, which could include, you know, the SPD, the SMM, the SAR, the annual funding notice requirement, any QDIA notices, pension benefit statements, and it could also include a safe harbor notice if the IRS allows it. And a combined notice must be furnished once every year and no more than 14 months after the date it was last furnished, kind of like the fee disclosure rules where it's got to be once a year, not greater than 14 months apart. You know, in terms of the website, if the materials are available on a website and you direct the plan participants to it, you know, obviously the plan sponsor has to make sure that the website works. You know, it's got to be, you know, the documents have to be there by the date it's required. It's got to be there on for a year at least, or if superseded, such as an SPD, which means longer. It's got to be in a widely available format that is suitably be read online. So obviously PDF, none of these, I have a Mac computer and it's annoying, when I have clients send me a winmail.dat file. So make sure it's a PDF or some other easily readable format. What were some of the older formats? What's like OCR and TIFF? And these are the days before PDF. And again, that's certainly carbon dating me, or, you know, aging me by what I remember. And then, of course, again, it's got to be, you know, easily printed on paper. So, again, PDF is probably the way to go. There's a fine line between being clever and stupid. So be clever and use PDF. Don't be stupid and use a format that nobody uses, like, you know, like Betamax or something, like the Betamax of PDF files. Don't do that. And it's also got to be in a format where people can actually search it on the website by numbers, letters, words. And then obviously, no-brainer, it's got to be the website's got to be protected to protect the confidentiality of plan participants' personal information. In terms of paper copies and the right to opt out, there are two safeguards to ensure proper receipt by participants. Plan sponsors must promptly furnish a free paper copy of a covered document upon request. And participants have a right to globally opt out of all electronic delivery free of charge and receive only paper documents. So, reminds me of my old synagogue's newsletter. We wanted to stop the mail, but, you know, there were some members that didn't have email, so we wanted to have them to have the rights to still receive paper copies. And, you know, again, ERISA is all about protecting participants' rights. Participants have the right to paper copies and the right to opt out of this. In dealing with termination from employment, when participants terminate from employment, the plan sponsor has to take measures to either ensure the continued accuracy and available electronic address or obtain a new email address that allows for electronic delivery of covered documents after the individual severance from employment. That's a headache. Dealing with former participants is a headache because, you know, sometimes you let them go. It's not for the best of reasons. And so you don't say to them, hey, by the way, I've been using your work email. And since we canned you because you stole from us, what's your new email address? I don't know if plan sponsors ever have that conversation. I worked at a place, and there was a lovely guy in the file room. His name was Ken Brown. He's still around. Not for that company anymore. Ken Brown was one of the nicest guys I know that I ever worked with. Ken Brown is 6'7", or I don't know. He was like 6'4", 6'7". Big guy. Sweetest guy you ever met. But he was tall, and for certain people, he could be intimidating. And Ken Brown's job, when somebody was terminated for cause, or even not for cause, just for, you know, whatever it may be, Ken Brown did the walk with the former employee to make sure nothing was destroyed, they didn't steal anything and whatnot. So I can't imagine today Ken Brown walking somebody to the elevator and asking them for the email address that they want their notices sent out to. I don't think it works that way. In addition, there's a alternative email method. Again, this is a notice and access method. Sending an email, which is, dealing with disclosures with retirement plans, and again, if you're attaching a document, you gotta label it as such, advise the plan participants kind of what the notice is. It's just real, without getting into the nitty-gritty about it, it's real common sense. It's all about being transparent. And again, I think that the biggest problem is going to be the bounce backs. Because I know my role working for TPAs, and a lot of TPAs that are very good and are going to be on top of this, and there are going to be a lot of TPAs that are just going to let these slide. And it's going to be a problem for plan sponsors if a Department of Labor auditor asks one day for the disclosure list, like the email address, what have been using, what's the report. And they may actually ask you for the plan sponsor for the actual email report. Who knows? And it's going to be hard to tell the plan. It's going to be hard to tell the DOL plan auditor that, these bounce backs, this 2%, 3% bounce back, we didn't follow up with these people. And that's going to be a huge, huge problem for plan sponsors and a huge plan headache. But, in terms of the costs, email programs, they're pretty smart. They can tell you when it bounces back. It's just great. It's a great system. But again, as with any great systems, there are going to be consequences. And the consequences are you will have a lot of plan sponsors who will let things slide, and participants, especially former employees, won't get the notices that required. How many plan sponsors don't bother with the bounce back of the mailed notices? Quite a bit. You'll be surprised. So that's just one thing. And again, I think that, obviously right now, a lot of plan providers, plan sponsors don't really care about this. The rule is not going to be final until July 27th. I think that, again, this is something that is going to be a huge game changer for the industry, because it's, again, another method where we can cut down on costs, we could be more transparent in fees, we could cut fees to compensate, to deal with the fact that, plan sponsors are going to kill a lot less trees, pay a lot less mail paper and whatnot. So to me, when you look at some of the changes during this pandemic, CARES Act and e-disclosure and change of the no need for a notary right now, a live notary right now for some of the election forms and this private equity exposure in DC plans. This, to me, is the biggest change of all. Everybody's thinking about the billions and billions that are coming out because of the CARES Act, COVID distributions. But again, over time, over the next 20 years, we're going to save probably in the billions of dollars in terms of savings through the use of this e-disclosure rule. So I hope you enjoyed this little insight, little nugget of this new rule, and I'm sure that the Department of Labor is going to further delineate and further explain this guidance, and I'm sure that the IRS might, hopefully, I think the IRS will piggyback this and allow for the delivery of their notices through email as well. So hope you enjoyed it, and see you guys next week. Take care. Bye.